सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावतीतमस्तमाविद् विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्ति। Welcome everyone to today's class. Been a, I think, 4 weeks since we've last had a class. You'll look fresh. Today's the 100th class of the Gita. Can you believe that? We've done, this is a
Yes.
100th class, and we've reached chapter 7. And we've got another 13 chapters to go. So we're going to just do a recap for the last topic, because I'm sure everyone is a bit sketchy about it. So we'll just quickly go over that. It doesn't matter if it takes us a bit of time, but we all need to be in the same page before we move to the next topic. And chapters. Been corrected, 11 chapters left to go. So this second topic of chapter 7 explains how Brahman manifests itself in this universe. Oh, what is Brahman? How is it that it is in the world? It's difficult for us to understand Brahman. It's beyond our capacity to understand what God is. So, Lord Krishna in this topic explains in known terms what Brahman is. This is verses 7 to 10, and we're going to cover 11 today. Brahman is the essence of everything that is in the world, the substratum that supports all existence. And in these verses, Lord Krishna speaks from the state of Brahman. Verse 7. Says, "There is naught higher than me, O Dhananjaya. All this is strung on me as rows of gems on a string. There is nothing higher than me, Arjuna. Everything is strung in this universe as rows of gems on a string." So Brahman is compared to a string of gems. Just as the gems in a necklace can only be held in place by the string, similarly, this universe, this world, all beings are held by the spirit Brahman. Without Brahman, there's nothing. Only Brahman exists. There is nothing greater than Brahman. Without Brahman, God, spirit, there would be no world and beings. Spiritual people understand the role of God in all that functions. They know the truth. But there are certain groups of people, unspiritual people, they don't understand. They think the person is acting on their own. I'm acting on my own. There is no God. There's no involvement of God. And in spiritual terms, this group of people are called Balaha, children, spiritual children. They haven't reached that state where they can comprehend what God is. So they're called spiritual children. That was verse 7. Is there any questions? Just raise your hand if anyone has a question, yeah? Verse 8 read, "O Kaunteya," another word for Arjuna, "I am the sapidity in waters, radiance in sun and moon, pranava, syllable om in all the Vedas, sound in space, manhood in men." As we said, Brahman, God, is everything in this world. But it's difficult to make people understand. Who created the universe? God did. How does that help you? How does that help you understand? Who created the universe? Brahman did. Who created the universe? Father in heaven did. Allah did. That doesn't make us any wiser. We still don't understand. So what is God? So Lord Krishna here says, I am the taste in water. Water has no taste, but without water, there can be no taste. I provide the taste in water. In our mouth, we have saliva. That's why we could taste the food. If we had no saliva, we could not taste anything. The tongue would be dry. Brahman has no taste, but is the essence of water, which is taste. I am the radiance in light, the source of all light. This source allows the sun and moon to emit light. Brahman has no light, but is the essence of light. Brahman is the virility in man, the motherhood in mothers, in females. What makes a man? It's his masculinity, his strength. I am macho in man. Om is the word symbol of Brahman and a powerful mantra. When you chant the mantra Om, it resonates with you. It has the capacity to take you to the self and become one with Brahman. When you meditate and chant on Om. It has the capacity to transform you from this world into the spiritual world. The word Om has the quality of allowing a seeker to attune to the self. The essence of the word Om is Brahman. So, a person who can't think of Brahman, who can't relate to God through the aspects of the world, they are given an idol to worship to represent Brahman. If you can't understand it this way, then you're given an idol. This represents God. So Brahman is the essence of everything. It's like saying, I'm the ocean of every wave. I'm the mud of every pot. I'm the sweetness in sugar. Essence of this world is Brahman. Any clarifications? Yeah, we understand? Just the recap. Then verse 9, it continues. I am the sweet fragrance in earth, the brilliance in fire. I am the life in all beings, the austerity in ascetics. I am the sweet fragrance in the earth. I am the essence of fire, which is its brilliance. I am the life in all beings, meaning the spirit, the Atman, the enlivening factor in all living things. Without the spirit matter, there is no expression of life. Everything is dead. It's like saying, I'm the fuel in all cars. Without fuel, the car cannot move, just a lump of metal. See, we're getting an idea of what Brahman is now, isn't it? Yeah. But just saying God, we don't understand. And then verse 10, O Partha, know me as the eternal seed of all beings. I am the intelligence of the intelligent, the splendor of the splendid. Brahman is the eternal seed of all beings. Every one of us comes from Brahman. Everything in this world comes from Brahman and goes back into Brahman. It's like the ocean saying, I'm the seed of all waves. Every wave comes from the ocean, goes back into the ocean. I'm the intelligence of the intelligent. Again, Brahman is the cause for our intelligence. It's what makes us think. Brahman is the reason why the mind is able to feel the emotions, love, happiness. It's Brahman that enlivens the mind and intellect to feel and think. When you meet someone who is highly spiritual, a swami or a sage, there's a glow about them that is different from a normal worldly person. There's a radiance to his personality. I am the radiance of this person who has unveiled the Atman, the self within, a spiritually developed person. So Brahman is the radiance described as the splendor of the splendid. What are these verses trying to say? What is this verse is trying to say? Anyone? What is this universe? What is this world? Brahman, God. This whole world is Brahman. It's God. There's nothing but Brahman. But we don't identify with that. This is the problem. We think we are different from God. God is on higher pedestal than us. God is almighty. And we think we're too small compared to Brahman, to God. But it's saying everything is God. Your little finger and your big thumb, everything is God. Any questions? That's where we went up to. Then there's verse 11, which finishes off this topic, which we'll cover now. Yeah? Okay. So, verse 11. Balam balavatamasmi kamaraga vivarjitam dharmavirudobhutesu kamosmi bharatasabha. Balam balavatamasmi kamaraga vivarjitam dharmavirudobhutesu kamosmi. I am the strength of the strong, devoid of desire and attachment. I'm the strength of the strong, devoid of desire and attachment. In beings, I am desire, which is not contrary to Dharma, order of the Vedas, O Bharatasabha. In beings, I'm desire, which is not contrary to Dharma, O Arjuna. So it continues from the last few verses we've just covered. Ravi, paragraph one, please.
The strength of a person is related to his self-centeredness. The more selfish you become, the less strength you wield. Conversely, when you drop your selfishness, no longer obsessed with egocentric desires and attachments, you gain power and strength. Your attachments pertain to your past. Bound by them, you worry and suffer the sorrows thereof. Your desires relating to your future make you anxious to gain their fruits. These worries from the past and anxieties for the future sap your energy and strength. You see this truth clearly when you compare an adult to a child. A child efforts eats with energy and vigor all the time, whereas the adult slouches with fatigue and exhaustion. This paradox stems from the fact that a child has neither worries from the past nor anxieties for the future. But in the case of an adult, his attachments and desires infest his mind with endless worries and anxieties. This weakness drains his strength. However, those who practice tapas, spiritual disciplines, overcome their attachments and desires to command power and strength. And the enlightened one, absolutely free from this weakness, becomes omnipotent.
So, the more selfish you are, the less energy you have. Why is that? The more selfish you are, the less energy you have. Yeah, Nilam.
Because all your energy is wasted in mental agitations about holding on to the past or worrying about the future.
Yeah. And the more you do that, the more selfish you think of yourself, the more energy you dissipate. The more energy you dissipate, the less strength you have. This is what it's saying. The mind is constantly agitated. When can I get that? How can I be better than the other person? This is mine, not yours. My money, my house, my business. And you're worried about all this. This guy did this to me in the past. So, these worries and anxieties, what's going to happen to me in the future, saps your energy. When you're running after desires, objects, and beings, it saps your energy. And the example it's giving is that the child has none of these anxieties. He's just worried about his toys. When can I play? So they have so much energy. We as adults are so much stronger than the child. 5-6-year-old child. How much strength does the child have? How much strength do we have? We're so much stronger. We can lift them up. No problem. But we have no energy. This is what it's saying. In life, we're constantly worried of the past and anxiety for the future. Why did this happen to me? What did I do to deserve this? The more selfishness, meaning self-centeredness, the less strength we have. The minute you stop being selfish, stop running after worldly desires, and you start practicing spiritual disciplines, meaning gain knowledge, understanding, you start gaining strength and energy. And this strength and energy you can apply to your life in any areas. You can apply it to gain self-realization. That's why you have to reduce your desires to be able to meditate. Because if you're all constantly worried and agitated, how can you sit and calmly meditate? It's impossible. That's why these great saints go and live in a cave. Nothing to disturb them. Krishna proclaims he is the strength that one has when one is devoid of desires and attachment, the energy and strength. Krishna said, I am that energy and strength. Any clarifications? So how do you gain strength? How do you gain strength, Vinita? How do you gain strength?
You have to take your mind away from the anxieties and the worries and discipline yourself, I suppose.
And how do you do that?
We try to turn your knowledge into wisdom and practice it.
Very good. You have to learn the knowledge to understand the world. You have to learn the knowledge to make yourself wiser. What is my purpose? And that spiritual knowledge allows your mind to be calmer, because you won't be saying, why did this happen to me? What did I do? What's going to happen to me in the future? You know, everything is sorted. You know the answer. This happened to me because of whatever actions I did in the past. What's going to happen in the future? What I wanted to happen based on my karma. So what's the point of worrying about it? So then you stop. Because you have the understanding, you have the knowledge. So,
I just wanted to clarify the strength and energy that you're talking about is mental, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's mental strength we're talking about here, not physical strength. I can build muscles, be strong, strongest man in the world, spiritually dunce. Yeah, we're talking mental strength. So it enables you to overcome your problems. And this mental strength is gained from wisdom. Krishna says, I am that strength. Yeah. So, Ravi.
In the latter part of the verse, Brahma declares that it exists in beings as desire, which does not conflict with Dharma, meaning the order of the Vedas. The Vedas contain the higher spiritual injunctions directing mankind to their supreme abode. Brahman, those who entertain a desire for Brahman, for self-realization, follow the path ordained by the Vedas. All other desires are secular. They merely pursue material wealth and sensual enjoyments. They follow a direction opposed to the Vedic order. Therefore, the desire for self-realization, in line with the Vedic injunctions, leads to Brahman. This desire for Brahman in the ultimate state merges with Brahman. The verse expresses this idea poetically as Brahman being the divine desire itself.
I am the desire that is not contrary to Dharma. Now, to understand this sentence, I am desire that is not contrary to Dharma. To understand this sentence, what do we need to understand? The word Dharma. Everyone needs to be on the same page as to what does Dharma mean. What is Dharma? What does Dharma mean? Anyone? Nilam? Half-hander?
Is it life purpose?
Life purpose, yeah. What is my purpose in life? That is my Dharma. Depends on your purpose, though. Yeah, depends on the purpose. This is exactly, actually, it's good that you pointed that out, because this is exactly what it's saying in this verse. That I am the Dharma, yeah? But contrary to the Vedas, not that. I'm the Dharma that takes you to Brahman. Not the opposite of that. So what is Dharma? Yeah, Vanita?
Is it like a path paved to reach enlightenment? So following a certain way which guides you to where you need to go? So
yeah. What is specifically in this verse that says, what is that guidance?
Self-realization.
Self-realization. But what takes you to that state? It says specifically in this verse. What takes you to that level? What is it that you must read, understand?
The Vedas.
The Vedas. Who said that?
I did, Joshna.
Joshnabin. The Vedas. So it's saying here, I'm the strength of the strong, devoid of desire and attachment. In beings, I'm desire, which is not contrary to Dharma. So I'm the desire that here takes you to that state of self-realization. And what takes you to that state of self-realization? The Vedas. You study the Vedas, you understand the Vedas. So that strength that allows you to read the Vedas, understand the Vedas, I am that. But Dharma as itself, we can say, what does Dharma mean? For example, Dharma of sugar is... What is the Dharma of sugar, would you say? Hmm? Who takes two sugars in their coffee? Why? Dharma?
Sweetness.
Sweetness. Dharma of sugar is sweetness. Dharma of coffee is? Why do you drink coffee and not tea? What's the difference? What's the Dharma of coffee?
Taste. Yes,
hi, who's that?
Taste.
Taste. Everything you can taste in all everything you drink or eat, there's taste. But what specific taste is there?
Bitterness.
Bitterness. Dharma of coffee is its bitterness. Dharma of fire is heat. Dharma of sun is light. Dharma of human beings is the self. So, I am the strength that takes you to the self. But not the Dharma that takes you away from the self. This is what Lord Krishna is saying. What is the opposite of Krishna state? That he is the desire that one has when one is following the spiritual path, following the Vedas to become enlightened. But the opposite of this, what is the opposite of this? What is the opposite of what takes you to be enlightened? Because Krishna says, I'm not that. What takes you away from the Vedas? Dharmesh?
Filling desires for selfishness.
Worldly desires. Why worldly desires? Because they take you away from the spiritual path. So he's saying, I am desire which is not contrary to Dharma, meaning worldly desires, I'm not that. I'm the desires that take you to Brahman. So desires for the world means no desire for Brahman. Desire for Brahman means no desire for the world. And you can only get to that level if you have the knowledge and understanding of what life, the purpose of life, and what this world is. This is what we're studying. So
would the question arise that desires and the world is a dharma?
So the word adharma means opposite of dharma. Dharma, you read the Vedas, takes you to your goal in life, self-realization. Adharma is the desires that take you away from that. Any questions? Is everyone clear about this? Any clarifications? Brahman being is the desire, the divine desire itself. Ravi.
Bharatsava, another name for Arjuna, means bull among the Bharatas. The bull
epitomizes
the very culture of India. It demonstrates a great principle of living. A bull plows the field the whole day, cultivating grains for human consumption. In return for its hard labor, without a selfish motive, it gets only some hay for its substance. It functions on the principle maximum work and minimum profit. No ego or egocentric desires pollute the bull's work. No katriva, bhavana, I am the doer attitude, or bhuktra, bhavana, I am the enjoyer attitude. Its work rests on service and sacrifice. While modern educated people follow the principle of minimum work and maximum profit throughout the world, they need to graft this lofty principle of work into their lives. Be a bull in society. Krishna declares Arjuna as one such in the noble race of the Bharatas.
Very interesting. Krishna tells Arjuna, be a bull amongst men by calling him Bharatasabha. Be a bull. Not for the reasons what normal people would think. Be a bull, mean being strong, make sure you do this. You know, it doesn't mean that. So the example is given of a bull working in a field. A bull has no ego. Bull doesn't say, hey, I've done all this work. Works all day in the field for what? Some hay, grass. This is all you're giving me? I've been working 10 hours. You give me some hay, grass. Is that it? So the bull represents maximum work, minimum profit, and no selfish attitude. So he's saying, be a bull, Arjuna. Don't worry about what reward you're going to get. Just do what you need to do. No selfishness, no ego. How do we function in the world? Not all of you, but generally, how do people function? Gail, how do people function?
Minimum output, maximum profit.
Don't do this from now on, yeah? Be a bull. What were you? Maximum profit for minimum work. This is how we function. And then on top of that, we say, I did that. I finished that project.
Yeah, it's a capitalist world, right?
Exactly. This is how it is in this world right now. This is what Krishna is saying. How many thousands of years ago? So it's a lot worse now than it was then. I did this. Minimum work, maximum profit, plus ego on top of that. So we're the opposite. So look here, Lord Krishna says, be a bull, meaning just do your duty. Don't worry about the reward. No selfish ego. So this is how we need to function in life. And it's the ego that comes in the way in everything, isn't it, really? I am the doer. Just do your duty. And that's it. Any clarifications? Any questions? See, if you functioned in this way, you're just doing what you ought to do. God has gifted me with this talent. Let me help society with this talent. Vanita, God has given you a gift to cut hair. Let me just cut people's hair. That's it. So this is how we need to function. So that's the end of topic two. Now, before we begin topic three, which is entitled, by the way, The Vicious Do Not Know or Seek Brahman. So we're going to look at the opposite side, people in the world who have no understanding of God. But before we do that, as you're aware, you know, one of our valued members of class, Hema Ben, passed away. And it brings sadness to every one of us, you know, to see a fellow member and a good human being pass away like this. And we're going to have 1 minute silence for that. Yeah. So if everyone can do a prayer, and we will do 1 minute for her Atman. You can chant Om in your mind silently. Okay, thank you for remembering Hema Ben. So some of you wanted to discuss what's happened. A few moments to just make sense of what's happened to Hema Ben from a spiritual perspective. So at least we get some understanding of this process. And I think best way would be for me to read this verse from the Gita, first of all, and then we can discuss it. Yeah, and you can ask questions to the group so we have some idea. So this is verse 13 from chapter 2. It's not one that is read. Normally it's verse 22, but verse 13 goes into a bit more depth. And it says, Dehi nosmin yatha dehi komaram yovanam jara tatha dehantara praptir tirastatra namukyati. Just as the embodied passes through childhood, youth, and old age in this body, So does it pass into another body. There the wise one is not grieved. Just as the embodied passes through childhood, youth and old age in this body, so does it pass into another body. There the wise one is not grieved. It's an understanding. We're always changing. Baby, childhood, teenager, adult, elderly person. What's after that? New body. If you look at this cycle as a complete cycle from the first time you're born to the last time your birth and death, it's just the whole cycle. How many lifetimes? 100 lifetimes maybe you've had, 150 lifetimes. But we only look at this life, our attachment in this particular life. And because we can't understand what's happened, Emma passed away at age 52 or 53. So young. How is that possible? Why is it possible? We can't understand it. So this is the issue. We can't make heads or tails out of it. Why? Why is this? Because we don't understand how life and death works. We don't understand it. So I'm going to read this commentary. Atman is all-pervading, omnipresent. It exists in all sentient beings and inert objects. Being all-pervading, it has no movement. Because if it already exists everywhere, where could it move? Therefore, Atman is said to be immovable. Yet, the general belief is that at death, Atman moves away from the physical body. Any Atman Shanti Male, this is what we say. That doesn't stand. Atman is said to be immovable. General belief is that at death, Atman moves away from the physical body. This is not true. At the time of death, the mind, intellect, not the Atman, leaves the body and enters another. The transference of mind intellect from one physical body to another is the death of the previous body and birth of the new body. This phenomena occurs within the medium of the all-pervading Atman. What does that mean? What do we understand from that?
The Atman is constant, like electricity. So you've just replaced the bulb, if you want to break it down to that sort of
essence.
The Atman is constantly there. It's already on. You're just changing.
The bulb dies.
Yeah.
Electricity is still flowing to that bulb, but the bulb is dead. What? How do you get light again? You change the bulb. You have a power, more powerful. You change it to a more powerful bulb, we get a more light. Less powerful, but we get less light. But the electricity is remaining there, still the same. Imagine the ocean. A fish is born. It grows in the ocean, becomes bigger, then it dies in the ocean. The ocean remains the same. But here what it's saying is that it's only the mind and the intellect, the personality of that person, moves on to the new body. So how can Hema be dead? How can Hema have died? If this was what Lord Krishna is saying. No one actually dies. just reborn in another body. That personality continues from the day it, the first birth to the last death, when you reach moksha, self-realization. Until then, that same personality is continuing, governed by karma. The body, mind, intellect defines the individual human personality. Beyond the material equipment of the body, mind, intellect lies the spirit or Atman, the very core of the human being. Every individual has the same spiritual core, the all-pervading Atman. The different variety of people arises out of the heterogeneous variety of the material equipments. Material equipment passes through the different stages of childhood, youth, and old age. Likewise, the embodied mind intellect passes into another body at the time of death. Therefore, neither the embodied mind intellect nor Atman ceases at time of death. It's just the cycle. Just like you are from the baby born to a toddler, toddler to a teenager. It's just different cycles. The cycle continues, the death of the body, birth of the new body. Does everyone get an idea of what it means? Any questions? Any clarifications? Do we all understand what this is saying? We remember Hemaben as how she was. She's now born elsewhere in a different body, but the personality is the same. She started gaining knowledge and she will continue gaining that knowledge because the only thing that goes with you is this knowledge and your desires. So what's there to grieve about, Lord Krishna is saying? Why do we grieve? I'm not saying it's wrong to grieve, by the way, but why is it that we grieve? Yeah, Kewal.
It's our attachment.
Attachment. Sashi, what do you say?
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. It's because of our attachment, our memories with that person, our bond, and everything that we shared with them.
Yeah. That brings us unhappiness, no? Because we miss that person.
Yeah.
Dharmesh, what were you saying?
I was going to say the same. It's our, we have the knowledge, but we haven't turned it into wisdom to understand it. If we did, then we'd understand that we should be happy that this person has moved on because they're going on to increase their knowledge elsewhere.
Hey, she might have been the one who got the most knowledge and she's moved on because, you know what, these classes ain't doing it for her. She needs to reach that state. Next life, she wants to reach that state. Do we look at it that way? We don't, do we? She might have been rewarded. You don't want to go to this class. You know what? Nonsense, the teaching. You need to go to the next level. Next birth, you'll get to that next level. If you knew that to be the case, would you be upset? No. You'd be happy, wouldn't it? One person got elevated from this class, at least. When will it be my turn? You'll be saying, when will it be my turn? You'll be saying, you'll be happy for her. So what does it boil down to? What does it boil down to? Yeah, Vinita?
We can't take anything with us. The ability to experience everything that we have here and the opportunity to gain as much knowledge as possible. Everything else is, I suppose, a minor thing, really, compared to the bigger picture of where you're going.
Which is meaning, lack of understanding. In that area, we are ignorant. What happens when a person dies? My attachment is so strong, I miss her. But you don't understand the process. You don't understand what happens. Promotion, she's got promoted. Are you upset because you got left behind? Do you understand? Why don't we can look at it from another perspective? Because of a lack of understanding, we feel grief.
I think there is an aspect of grief where we not only grieve or feel sorrow for the person that's gone and we miss them, but we're grieving for our loss as well. And, you know, whilst everything that's written in the Bhagavad Gita and what Lord Krishna says gives us strength and hope and helps us during our time of sorrow, you know, nobody knows for certain what happens when somebody dies. And it's that uncertainty, isn't it? So, for example, if you knew that, you know, yep, somebody's come back, this is what happens, this is precisely what occurs, you've got that known. There's this aspect of a little bit of unknown, isn't there? And that ununderstanding is what we're kind of mixed up about, uncertain about. And yeah, on the one hand, we've got a bit of hope, but on the other, we're also feeling our loss and questioning, you know, why did you go at this time?
Ignorance. That's exactly what Sil is saying. We don't understand. And this is the problem. But if you understand, it's quite straightforward. It's our own attachment, our own love. She used to read in class. We miss her because we miss her reading in class. But that's because it's our needs once again. Isn't it? It's our needs. See, we put up this idea. General society puts up this idea. Person born should go for this school, then college, university, get a degree, should get married, be successful. They should live till 85, 90 years old, anything less than that, that's not normal. We place these ideas without any understanding, yeah, without any backing. And when those demands are not met, we get upset. Who are we to put that idea up in the first place? What do we know? Brahman works in these ways. How do we know? We don't even know what God is. And we place these ideas up there. If a person passes at 50, then that's not normal. Why did they pass away? A baby passed away. Why did a baby pass away? We have no understanding. But we feel that they should all live, go through this process of life and reach this age. So we place these ideas, and when the ideas are not met, we get upset. It's ludicrous. You see, if you understand it from that perspective, it's silly. So that's what it boils down to, a lack of understanding. Yeah, cool.
A quick question. Just basically to confirm my understanding, yeah? When someone passes away from this material world, they have exhausted all their desires. And the result of that can be one of two options. One is you still have more desires, and so you need to take on another form, another body to help complete those. Or the second option is you've exhausted all your desires completely, and you've attained moksha. Is that correct?
So the second half is correct, but the first half is incorrect. You said you've exhausted all your desires. If you've exhausted all your desires, then there's only one level, which is moksha.
So I meant all your desires that you have with you in this material world.
No, you can't exhaust all your desires. Hence, you've passed on to another body.
Got it. Okay. Got
yeah.
It.
If you had no desires, you've reached moksha. There's no need for you to be reborn again, because you've reached self-realization. But because you haven't, and this body can't fulfill those desires anymore, you don't know what desires are there. Yeah. Therefore, you have to take another body.
Okay. So just to summarize again then, so basically you've exhausted what you've
exhausted. You haven't exhausted anything. Take that word out.
Right.
You're not exhausted anything unless you've reached self-realization.
But surely you move on to another form or another body, because the current body is not capable of exhausting everything for you, right?
Absolutely correct. Absolutely correct. Now you got it. And that's why we're born again.
And then another question, is it instantaneous? So when you move from one... if you haven't exhausted all your desires and you're moving from one place to the from one body to the next, is that instantaneous? Or
we wouldn't know the answer to that. And I'm not going to say I know either. But you know, there are lots of stories, a lot of stories in scripture saying, oh, then they enjoy heaven and there's different levels of heaven. And, you know, but we don't know. We're not in a position to understand that. But general consensus is that it happens sort of straight away. Yeah. The general idea in scriptures I've read is that it happens straight away.
Thank you.
But then there's so many stories about heaven, so, you know, we don't know. Yeah, Nilam?
Can I ask them, why is it that in our culture we do the 13 days of, you know, bhajans and getting everyone together? Because my understanding, which is, you know, probably been passed down, is the reason we do that is while the soul is transitioning to another body. But if there's, you know, if there is no such thing as time and space, then actually that doesn't make sense.
Anyone know why the reason we do that? Where's Silgon? She would know. Yeah, Dharmesh?
It's because of our lack of understanding. It's to help people mourn, to understand, comfort. Yeah. It's what I would say. It's because if you know that the person is going to a better place, or you know, but everyone else is still stuck in the material world and they're worried about me, the self, I have lost, I have done this, not the person themselves, unfortunately.
Vinita?
I would say there is some time that you have to grieve that person and their personality. So if you come together and you're doing it, it's almost like you... it's a farewell, isn't it? But then after that 10-13 days is over, then you have to move on with your life. So I suppose it's a limited time of that you remember that person and what they did, and then you move on. But we don't do that, do we? We just drag it on, don't we? Maybe.
So from my perspective, this is my personal opinion, we do this to give solace to the family. See, the person's passed away. It could be mother, father, son, whatever. But that person's passed away. So there's a grievance, there's loss, attachment. And they can't deal with it on their own. So family members come, they read the scriptures, they chant bhajans. And as time goes, time is the greatest healer. As time goes, the person becomes less, they feel less grief. And the number given is 13 days. Thereafter, after 13 days, maybe the grief level from 100 is now at maybe 20, where the family can now continue. They don't need the support and help. So it's to help that family get over that loss. And what are you doing? You're reading scriptures, you're reading bhajans, and, you know, you're talking about that person. And, you know, it's just generally, it's calming to the family. That's what I feel. Yo.
Really, it's just a ritual for us that's left behind, right? To continue to manage to cope. Otherwise,
absolutely,
we'll just fall apart.
Yeah. 13 days with family, friends, reading the scriptures, chanting bhajans, and you're feeling better. If that wasn't available, it might take you months to get over it. Yeah. So that's why I feel, because the person who's passed, they don't need it. It's the people who are left behind need it. So it's for them. It's.
Thank you.
Yeah. So why don't I finish that last paragraph of this verse? Your mind intellect uses your physical body to fulfill and exhaust your existing desires or vasanas. Vasanas are desires in the unmanifest form. When your present body can no longer be used to exhaust your vasanas, your mind intellect finds another physical body that can exhaust them. The old body dies and a new body is born. This process of birth and death goes on and on until your last vasana is exhausted and your mind intellect merges with Atman. You become one with the Supreme Self. You become one with God. The wise understand this process of reincarnation and its culmination in self-realization. Hence, they do not grieve at the change of life. They do not grieve at change of life because they understand this is a process to their on their spiritual path. And knowing Hema, trust me, she's got a promotion. So what's there to grieve about? Be happy for her. She's promoted. When will it be our turn? I hope that helps everyone to deal with the passing, understanding, just generally. You know, with this knowledge, if there's any other death in the families, your families, you have this knowledge to help them. You know, you can be their anchor. Don't worry, this is what happens. Any clarifications, any questions regarding this? Aruna Ben, make sense? Shashi Ben, make sense? Good. No. Don't worry, it will make sense. Read that. You got the chapter, Bhagavad Gita, read it.
It makes sense, but in the way of like when you look at it about your body not being able to serve you anymore, and that's why you've passed on. I think that's what I find the most difficult thing at the moment to get my head around, because she doesn't really have an ill or diseased body, or nor is she that old. So I think that's the hardest thing, that you feel like, why did the soul move on?
But we don't know what desires she has unmanifested. Yeah, see, it's unmanifested desires. They're not manifested yet because they can't, because in the current situation that that person is in, those desires cannot manifest because they can't be fulfilled. And she may have no more desires left that can be manifested and fulfilled in this body. All her desires that are left cannot be exhausted in this body. And she doesn't know that. None of us know what desires we have that are unmanifested. Did I know I had a desire to teach this knowledge 20 years ago? I'll be saying, yeah, there's something wrong with you. It's crazy. And it manifests. I had no idea. People knew me before. They think I'd be the last person. So what desires do we have that are not manifested? We have no idea. Does that make sense, does she? Yeah. Her desires that are left behind, we don't know what they are. This environment, this body may not be sufficient for that. But this is how we have to understand that. Great. It's good to be back after how many weeks? And thank you for joining us today. And we will continue topic 3. The vicious do not know God. Who are these vicious people? We'll find out next week. Inshallah. Have a lovely Mother's Day, all the mothers, ladies out there.